teams are not defined by their cross-functional nature. And this article just kind of assumes, well, we always have cross-functional teams. If we say we've got work to do, let's put together a cross-functional team, I think we're starting in the wrong place. So they probably will end up cross-functional, but it's better if what you do is think of a team as a reflection of the whole they are seeking to serve. So if you look at the stakeholders who are going to be affected, who is it that reflects that? Are there people who work with them directly? Are there people who have the same diversity and mix and experience and questions and responsibility? What you want is the mind of all the people, not looking at how many functions we've got, because that'll pull the mind internally, but looking at who are we serving as a team by the work we're doing, whether it's ongoing or as a project team. I have more often than not worked with groups who pull in their customers, their distributors, their suppliers. And it may or may not include all functions. And even the outside stakeholders may not be able to attend all meetings, but their core, they know they're being paid attention to. They know their voice matters. And all the work gets based then on the effects on those stakeholders is how we make choices.
Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. But first, we want to thank our sponsor for Business Second Opinion, Guayaki. I have not been disappointed picking up new flavors of Guayaki. Have you all tried Orange Exuberance? It's awesome. And we're also glad that Guayaki continues to brew their mate-based goodness through this challenging time. Mate, it also turns out, contains 24 vitamins and minerals, 15 amino acids, and abundant polyphenols. So it gives me the energy I want while also being a healthy choice. We hope you're going to check out this great beverage with your friends and family, and please let us know what you think. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. As you know by now, a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn more about how to work more closely with us, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So we got an article from a second opinion listener, Jalen Gildersleeve, who works as an impact manager for Wise Research. He wants a second opinion of a cross-functional team article from Harvard Business Review from June of 2015. And the article is entitled, 75% of cross-functional teams are dysfunctional, by Benham Tabrizi.
Yeah, and after reading it, we had a second opinion for sure. There are several shortfalls in the work from, if you stand in our shoes, a regenerative perspective. One is what we call paradigm blindness, and particularly on research methods. I mean, anytime someone starts advocating that they're coming from research, you know, that leads me to start to question and wonder what it is the paradigm they're researching from. And their advice is based on how they investigate teams, how teams are working, what they're doing. And what they also miss, I think, was so much of what a even better paradigm than the one they were suggesting could have taken people to. Why don't you get us started with their diagnosis?
So as a quick overview, Mr. Tabrizi proposed basically four golden rules of governance for cross-functional teams to keep them aligned and on track. So number one, every project should have an end-to-end accountable leader. Number two, every project should have clearly established goals, resources, and deadlines. Number three, teams should have the project success as their main objective. And then number four, every project should be constantly reevaluated.
And we chatted about this. What did you see as the paradigm blindness that they have?
Yeah, so good question to get us started here. So I want to turn that back on our listeners for a second. And as a reminder, the four paradigms we discuss quite often here are extract value, arrest disorder, do good, and regenerate. So I would encourage you all actually who are listening to pause, go back and re-listen to the four golden rules of governance I just read, holding those paradigms in mind, and watch the language that's at play. Go ahead. Don't worry. We'll wait. Okay. So what's my read on the four golden rules here, as you asked me, Carol? So as I was kind of reading through them, the entire premise of the article here is that cross-functional teams, by and large, do not deliver according to his five criteria, which are meeting a planned budget, staying on schedule, adhering to specifications, meeting customer expectations, and maintaining alignment with corporate goals. In other words, they're disorganized and out of control. Therefore, they need rules to keep them in line. So again, in other words, to arrest the perceived disorder that this paradigm sees at work. But Carol, what else did you see here?
Well, as I was starting to say earlier, when I see the word research as the basis of an argument, I'm always alerted. They are imposing in this particular one an authoritative and expert model by using the idea of saying, we did research, we are the experts. Now, what they don't do is point out the bias that they have in what they're paying attention to. And we've produced other episodes on this. So, and I also just published an article on research bias in research that I was forced to do in my doctoral program and got all my folks in my study to admit and see how biased they were. I'll put that in the show notes. But Zach, what did you think of their suggestions? You gave us a quick outline of the four solutions they had, but give us a little more from your window.
Yeah, totally. So I'll give you an actual concrete example here. So when I was in healthcare, I rarely saw cross-functional teams come together. But when I did, it was like they had forgotten that other people existed outside of their department. So you could imagine what things were like inside there. Oftentimes, leaders would be nervous about these teams coming together outside of their respective silos. And so they would want to have rules put in place that were honestly not dissimilar from the ones that are on offer here. The issue was never about having the rules. It was always about connecting their abstract relevance to the actual work while always trying to remember them. They would often end up written on the wall of wards. And within 2 weeks, they get buried behind work schedules and health alerts and new procedures and all the rest of the rules that they had to follow. And it just ended up becoming more noise.
Right. So let's start maybe on the regenerative view with some explanations for the dysfunctional teams that are given, but give some alternative ideas. And of course, you well know, I've done tons of work over four decades with building, designing, setting up, teaming. And so I love this question that Jaylen sent. The first principle is link the work to external stakeholders, the beneficiaries of the team's work. And you just hinted at that. The groups act like there's no one outside of them. They're just, a law unto themselves. And what this team offered here was really goals, measures, all with internal folks, no external stakeholders. Their projects, in my case, the projects that are embedded in the work should be embedded in the work. I think the very first thing that I got as I read through this is these organizations are project driven. In other words, somebody sees a project is needed. It looks like it's going to be across the organization. This guy called it systemic. And so someone in an authoritative role calls people together and they go to work. So here I'm suggesting that those goals should not be internal. The measures should not be internal. They should be those that this project is activating, or we'll come back to another way to do all this besides projects. But it would be connected to stakeholders. What are they measuring? What are their goals? How does what we're doing connect to that? So if they're going to get clear goals, it terrifies me if they're all internal. You want ones that are about the work and what it's going to be produced. Like in the companies I've worked in, and let's take manufacturing, for example, maintenance is not a separate department like it is in some places. It's embedded within the people who do the work. Quality is not outside, not a separate department. And improvement of work is done by the people every day, whether that's a software team or whether it's a food production team, but they know how to work at multiple levels at one time, how to do the work, how to do the maintenance and the improvement and figure out where they're going to go and how they stay connected to those external stakeholders. Nothing is imposed from someone outside that group who's doing this work. Like, well, if you take the example, it would be like, if you clean your garage only every 5 years, maybe when a new car shows up or a crisis arrives, versus think about how it works if you're cleaning, organizing, improving all of that as you go. And probably you're involving your natural team who's going to use it. So it's much lighter work. But I don't know how that stands up in your mind to any one of their solutions.
Well, I think what you're pointing to here is about building one's own capability while building the capability of those who directly benefit from the core offerings of the group or organization. This is the core of regeneration. So contrasted with, say, rules number 3, 4, and 5 that are written about here in the HBR article, which are about adhering to specifications, meeting customer expectations, and management expectations. And this is really about behaving like a machine. Right? There's someone else's external guidelines, and then you essentially end up following them without discernment.
Right. Plus, they still have it all outside of the normal work. It's like an add-on to your day, some additional groups. No wonder they don't work and they miss meetings. So let's go to the second principle. I think it's very important if you're going to work with any kind of teams, cross-functional teams within work settings, where the work and the project, you can hear me hinting at this already, is initiated from the teams that are going to steward that beneficiary ongoingly. And sometimes that's an individual within that group who initiates something. But they are the department, the function, the role that it's going to manage that work after this new project is done. And I've seen them initiate things for particular buyer nodes and buyer node groups. So you might have a cross-functional team in their setting for a new data management system, but it would come from the team who was going to manage data long-term. And that also might be, in some businesses I've worked with, we've created a data management person in each major functional group or in the market field teams, but they're driving it. So they would draw up a reflection of the organization that would be involved. And they would hold that in mind as they work rather than, as you pointed to, the management and the customer needs that they usually are not even responsible for. They're handed down to them by marketing or no, sales probably.
Yeah. So, and I'll give you another example, right? So back to healthcare, these cross-functional teams were often spawned from projects, as you're indicating, Carol, initiated from up on high by leaders or governmental structures that were totally disconnected from patients and even hospitals directly giving care. These projects would almost always fizzle out or get lost in the shuffle of the day-to-day, you know, even with all these rules in place from this article. That's because the stewardship of this work was imposed rather than generated in a relationship with a specific beneficiary.
And by the people who are responsible and exactly. Can connect to them, right? Yeah. So the third principle is that teams are not defined by their cross-functional nature. And this article just kind of assumes, well, we always have cross-functional teams. If we say we've got work to do, let's put together a cross-functional team, I think we're starting in the wrong place. So they probably will end up cross-functional, but it's better if what you do is think of a team as a reflection of the whole they are seeking to serve. So if you look at the stakeholders who are going to be affected, who is it that reflects that? Are there people who work with them directly? Are there people who have the same diversity and mix and experience and questions and responsibility? What you want is the mind of all the people, not looking at how many functions we've got, because that'll pull the mind internally, but looking at who are we serving as a team by the work we're doing, whether it's ongoing or as a project team. I have more often than not worked with groups who pull in their customers, their distributors, their suppliers. And it may or may not include all functions. And even the outside stakeholders may not be able to attend all meetings, but their core, they know they're being paid attention to. They know their voice matters. And all the work gets based then on the effects on those stakeholders is how we make choices.
So in the article, there's an explanation of a cross-functional structure put in place by Cisco, for example. In it, Mr. Tabrizi describes the physical structure of the team and its purpose, which when he says it was to heighten security for router lines. So while this is certainly a worthwhile endeavor, to be sure, as a reader, I'm curious how this router line security helped to grow Cisco at 80% per year, which he then cites right afterwards. How was the team structure derived? Why were the people in this team? And why the three layers? And was this structure deployed anywhere else? Regardless, in a regenerative paradigm, the structure is relevant only to the degree that reflects the whole they're seeking to serve, as Carol said. So if a buyer node was one focused on a desire for greater security, we should ask ourselves how we design teams that appropriately reflect this node. Plus, designing teams in this way keeps the will high from intrinsic motivation and the teams connected to what matters to stakeholders rather than bosses being kept in the know while holding on the reins. You know, Carol, these methods feel like a Sisyphean task. For each new goal, it's like they would need a cross-functional project team. So when I saw this at work in healthcare, each new project team would form, they'd put some rules in place, and then they would evaporate by the next quarter to avoid burnout from all the teams and tasks.
Yeah, Sisyphean task is going to be generated when every team is kind of unique. And by the way, you know this, but I want to tell our listeners that all of this kind of thing we're talking about here, we're giving you barely, you know, the top surface of it. But we are starting a new management community, the Regenerative Business Development Community, for just management in 2021. It includes how to build everything we're talking about here, how to build it from a regenerative strategy and a regenerative approach to leadership. So anyone who wants to know how to implement it, we're not done. We're still going to give you some more here. Email me, carol@carolsanford.com.
So I've actually been in these for about 3 years now, and I can see our participants getting a tremendous amount from the learning they implement in their organizations. Plus, there's a lot to gain from being in a community with business leaders developing and redesigning stuff together. So it's not a course about but really it's about ongoing learning and development work with a regenerative paradigm. Which actually reminds me, Carol, does the rest of the business have to operate differently if teams run this way?
Oh, absolutely, they have to. You can't take what we're saying here just today, although we're responding to this article, and implement it. The fourth principle is that organizations have operating infrastructure that fosters self-managing of all individuals and all teams, tying all their work to the overall direction of the business or organization and to the market, not to some internal goals. There are two ongoing teams that are always there, and where much of what they're talking about layers in hierarchy to try and take care of it. And if you read the regenerative business, or if you get it, you'll see that I talk about something called a core team. And it is an alternative way to look at how you get decisions made that isn't so hierarchical. It still has an overarching guidance to the organization as a whole, but it's a mix of the reflection of the organization. And the second one you've heard me talk about are market teams, which are all tied to that which is external that we serve and who our stakeholders are. These teams are thinking about not rules and where they have to get in there and be accountable, but they're thinking about capability building all the time. What they want to do is boost the knowledge of the industry, of the business strategy, into the people who are working with specific buyers or market teams, distributor teams, and how they give them enough they can help fulfill the aspiration and the ability to live their lives well. And there are much better alternatives than the idea of getting a bunch more hierarchy and layers and accountability oversight from outside. You can have something that, if you have in mind that the force principle is foster self-managing ableness, and then what you do is get everybody connected to the external world. So again, coming back to you, Zach, how does that compare in some way with real life, you might call it, or a less artificial world? They're almost like constructing. I felt like they were inside of a game constructing it. And comment a bit on the comparisons that you'd see between it.
Yeah, totally. So like looking at these more traditional cross-functional teams at work, because the goals are externally determined, the will for the work actually fades quickly. It's fundamentally disconnected from the day-to-day and therefore lacks relevance to how one gets work done. There's another reason why these teams quickly slip into being this kind of extra work done off the side of my desk, which I heard like constantly in healthcare. It's like all of this is done because my boss wants me to, so I do it as a favor or to stay employed, basically, rather than seeing how it works to build my own capability and the capability of those I'm serving. Carol, how do people pull this off in everything else that a business does?
Well, if something is driven from intrinsic, you begin and you have permission to look at whether anything you're currently doing as a group does not make any sense. And you feel like, why are we doing this? Here's the real work we need to do. You have a totally different culture. And if you have one where you start to engage people in growing self-accountability, which is the principle we're talking about right here, the fundamental motivation switches from external to internal, or intrinsic versus extrinsic, where it's not from outside. Now you have responsibility for serving a particular customer group with what you're making for Earth, with some decision you're making on buying, with communities and some decision you're making in product development or even in philanthropy. So the work falling off the desk isn't a thought anymore because no one's imposing that on me.
Right. That makes sense. As I'm sure you've guessed by now, by the way, these initiatives, including the example from Cisco, are also always fragmented. It's really clear how they connect to everything else that's going on. Yet another reason why they're often force-fed to folks and then tried to make to stick with external deadlines, team structure, and goals that are, once again, externally imposed. And so, Carol, I can hear some listeners asking, though, what do you do with people who are not high performers? Don't they need inspiration, motivation, discipline, or we have to go and hire really good talent to do all this?
Yep, that's the old paradigm. I think the fifth idea I hear may be helpful as a design principle for teams. It's very simple. Work developmentally. All work in every setting has development built into it. Also, with the idea that everyone has the capacity to build capability, to be accountable themselves for projects, for works in a self-managing way. We assume some people will, some won't, so we have to put supervisors over them. We have to have another layer of hierarchy, another layer of counterproductive accountability. I mean, why in the world would you do that? Why wouldn't you just build the capability of everyone? We don't do that in our culture, in our schools. We assume it will be hierarchical, which, by the way, is the lens they used on research. They were looking for how to get leaders to see their role. We work with a group called the Regenerative Educator Community. If any of you are interested in that, let us know. Corporate people, public, private institution who educate homeschoolers. And that is how it is you build this ongoing working developmentally process in everything you do.
That sounds pretty hard to conceive of. Can you give some examples?
Oh, yeah, right. And I know that it's not a thought in most people's heads. They want to be better to people, pay them better, equity, all that stuff. When I go into an organization or they come into one of our ongoing communities, what we do is show them how to set up a patterned ritual of development where everyone in the organization is more involved in regular meeting where they're introduced to better living systems thinking, critical thinking skills, personal self-management, and they're in natural work teams. So they're applying it every minute, every day. It's not like separate from the work. You have cold storage training by individuals. That process of meeting and then applying and all of you having the same language, the same frameworks, rapidly speeds up how people can work and everyone gets smarter. We have never done IQ tests, but we have had people who said within a year, they start to feel like they're smarter, they're more able, they're taking it home, they're putting it in their communities. And so I've done that everywhere with every business who's ever shown up. So it's not as hard as it sounds, but you have to put all that in place and you have to switch paradigms to do that.
So Carol, are there any more principles from a regenerative paradigm?
Well, there are, because it's hard to imagine. It's not a list that you're getting. It's a way of working. And so what I'm doing is using principles to articulate a paradigmatic view. Maybe one more I'll just mention here today that if you want to go read all the work I've written about paradigms on Medium, my most recent books particularly, you'll see that it's about build individual capability to lead ubiquitously. So you don't assume they're leaders as a level. You assume every individual is built and they can lead and therefore they can initiate. The way this happens is so contrarian to what this group recommends. Get one leader, they drive it, and then another set who drives this, and one overall leader. What we do and have done, I mean, long before I learned how to do this work, is done rotating leadership of all members, whether that's on the core team. I mean, there's some, you know, guidelines about how you do that. But you try and get people in leadership roles, and we have line operators who are leading executives over a 6 to 9 month period in how it is they're going to run meetings, think, make decisions. And out of that, you're building a whole new set of leaders. In Kingsford Charcoal, everybody was cannibalizing the people we were building. We had people who had an eighth grade education who were hired to go run the Clorox bleach groups and who were hired off to other companies because we had been from the beginning, whatever team they're in, having leadership roles. It's a part of a plan that everyone also puts together, which is called a promise beyond ableness. You can search for that. If you've got one of those search engines, it'll search one of our podcasts. But the hierarchy, which he is layer on here, I think it's a he, shifts to one that's more like a resourcing role, where the teams, they're helping build capability, help transfer knowledge. In many cases, they're a fiduciary for decisions which the SEC requires or shareholders require. But they instead, they may make a decision for fiduciary, but what they're doing is building the capacity for that team and every member on it to think about how earnings, margins, cash flow work, how you work with markets. And then they provide some high quality restraints to thinking, not take over their decisions as suggested here.
And we've discussed this before, but now I can actually see these principles and how they underpin an ongoing developmental process, rather than acting as symptoms, which we should look to mimic or duplicate.
Absolutely, they are. And that's why I said these aren't all the principles. What I see here is, you know, as we've talked, it's begun to become clear, this isn't just a risk disorder. It's a risk disorder of the extract value process. Like, it's all about getting people in line. In fact, it feels an awful like a new version of the command and control. We do run sessions. If you want to join us, a regenerative business development community, you can learn about how to do this. And we even have one. We have one for business, but we also have one for governing boards, whether they're commercial or, and all of those start the first of the year. And that can be commercial groups, not-for-profits, education boards. So let us know if you can join us.
We have several new learning communities to do this kind of thinking starting in January. So first off, a community of board members, for-profit, not-for-profits, hybrid boards of directors, or advisories. And a new cohort of business teams who engages in regenerative strategic thinking is actually starting as well. And this is actually a way to use systems thinking to develop strategy. Plus, there's an ongoing community for educators in all domains. We still have a few seats in the Women Entrepreneurs community, and so email us if you're interested in any of these at carol@carolsanford.com.
And we need your help. We need your help like Jalen did for us today and gave us an article on some business practice. It has to be within the business world. Sorry for all you people who are sending political articles, policy articles. I have to have something I feel like I can give a legitimate second opinion. You can email your article, Harvard Business Review, could be another place, to carol@carolsanford.com. Or you can put it on Twitter. I mostly manage to go see those. And you can either put it under my name, Carol Sanford, or biz_second_opinion. We'd also love it if you can donate to supporting the $10,000 a year production cost for putting this together. And you can find a way to do that on the Business Second Opinion webpage.
Also, your organization can set up a book club for The Regenerative Life, Carol's most recent book, using an extensive workbook and video online workshops for free. 50% discounts on bulk buys through her publisher. And you can find out more at carolsanford.com. Also, don't forget to sign up for the newsletter so you can get connections to the show notes and much more. This has been Business Second Opinion.